Today's show is brought to you by Hotels.com. Shop with Hotels.com now to take advantage of their great hotel deals, as well as save $30 on select hotel stays of $250 or more when you go to usehotels.com/chickenduck and use the code LISTEN30 at checkout. Some terms apply.
Are we ready?
I am.
Ryan, are you ready?
Sure.
You ready, Ryan?
Yeah.
What?
Are you ready?
No. I haven't slept in days. It's not any reason other than the kid. What's wrong?
Nothing.
Yimbo.
No, I don't know. I have the sign up thing on. Can we get the episode started and talk about it?
Oh, shit.
IPD is like NFL Red Zone with cops.
Spoiler alert.
The Capitol is up the street. You tell me they throw dynamite sticks around here? He's like, yeah, they do. Don't worry about it.
Welcome back, everybody. Episode 89, Ocho y Nueve. No, I don't think that's it. But anyway, 89.
Episode 89,
Episode
buddy.
89 of Saturdays with Chicken Duck. Only 11 more episodes, Kyle. 11 more. You can make it. Joining me this week is Ryan Vu.
Hello, hello.
And Casey.
Hi.
And me.
How are you?
Yeah. Here I am.
You're not good?
I'm not bad. We had Snuzzles last night. It was pretty tasty.
Snuzzles is good.
Yes, and then I had it again this morning because I took her parents out for dinner, and it was her dad's birthday.
But happy birthday, Hap.
Happy birthday, Hap.
Happy birthday.
But it was a week ago now, a week and a day ago now. But anyway, two sandwiches left over. Both of them each ate a half a sandwich, so they were going to the beach today, so we got to keep that.
So you had one full sandwich for yourself.
That's right. So today wasn't a bad day either.
What kind of sandwich?
Mostly all pastrami, all the way around. I had a Lisa Ann, which is pastrami and corned beef and Swiss cheese and Russian dressing on an open-faced sandwich. It's delicious. Tomato in there. Devin got a pizza. Her mom and dad each got a pastrami sandwich. Delicious. On a hoagie roll, though. I had mine on a marble.
Ooh, the marble rye.
It was delicious.
Can't go wrong with the marble rye.
Right.
We also went out to eat a week ago.
Yeah.
And we went to Dan's.
Ooh, underground. Isn't it under? Don't you go downstairs?
No. That's Boobies.
Oh, no. I'm thinking of the place right at the corner of Center Avenue. I don't know. It's in the town.
That's called...
In the town.
I thought it was called Dance.
No, it's a woman's name.
Oh.
Something. Martha's or something.
Chaffee.
Martha's?
Mama Chaffee's. No, in town. I was never there. No, Dan's was fantastic. I had duck.
No duck.
Ooh.
Duck breast. Mm-hmm. And it was phenomenal.
Duck is
very good. Barbara had scallops, and your grandmother had... What did she have?
I don't know. You want to go upstairs and ask her?
She had the salmon.
Oh, the salmon.
It was good.
What were we at a dance for?
Because I had some extra money last weekend. Ryan and I went up to see Joey Coco Diaz at the Parks Casino down in, everybody says Philadelphia, but it's in what, Bensalem?
Bensalem. Yeah.
So we go in, picked Ryan up. We got there around, what time, 6:30?
Yeah.
6 o'clock, maybe.
Show started. 7-ish, maybe, yeah. I think.
Doors open at 7 for the concert, or for Joey's comedy show. Mm-hmm. So we took a little extra time and played a couple slot machines before we went in. And I sat down at, I like the penny machines. I think Ryan does, too.
Yeah.
And I put a 20 in, and I hit it once, and I hit, like, it was like 60 cents I played, and I wanted to play like down less than that. You can play like 40 cents on the machine. So I wanted to hit the 40 cents and I hit $4 to bet $4. And I go, oops. And I hit it. And Vu goes, what? Oops, what? I go, I bet $4. I didn't want to do that. He goes, well, I think it worked out pretty good for you. It was $1,031.
I'd say so.
That I won. And on my second time I hit the button on a slot machine, on a penny machine.
Did you stop?
I stopped for a little bit, but no, I mean, I took 200 cash with me
right.
to spend.
So you had to spend
So
at
I
least
had to
that.
Spend that cash, you know what I mean? But I mean, when I got home, I had 1,100 and I bought, we had food there. I bought the food.
Yeah.
I stopped at Wawa after that, bought food there, got something to drink.
You always do take care of your people.
Yes, I do. So, yeah, it was pretty nice.
Good, man.
And then we went to see Joey, and it was fantastic.
Wait, that happened after or before?
No, that was before. I was like, dude, I don't even care if we go in and see Joey now. It's like, I'm ready to go home, you know what I mean?
He doesn't mean that, Joey.
No, I don't.
Yeah, we were only at the casino for 10, 15 minutes.
Yeah, when that happened.
Yeah, he hits. Oops, it worked out in your benefit.
Yeah. So every time Vu was hitting the button, then he kept going, oops, oops, oops.
I never got an oops.
No.
Not a good one anyway.
It didn't work out like that.
No. Well, I got the good, standard man. Oops.
Yeah, it was nice. And so Joey was great. Some guy opened for him, Matt Fulcheron. He was pretty funny. And then Joey was on for like an hour and 20 minutes about. And afterwards.
Just stand up?
Yeah, all stand up, yeah. And he's not really like a joke teller. He's more of a storyteller, sure. You know. Afterwards, he said he'll be out for pictures. And when we went out there, and there's this huge crowd around him. So we went and got something to eat. And what, we were gone for like 45 minutes at
yeah.
least.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And when we came back, there was like maybe 20 people standing around him yet. So I got up there, and Vu took my picture first with him. After that, and then I took Vu's picture with him. And Vu wore his chicken duck shirt. And when he went up. Like, Joey just shook my hand, and, you know, that was it. But he thanked Vu for coming to the show. Oh, and
congratulations,
like,
man. Now you're the figurehead of Chicken Duck.
And yeah. Like, hugged him in close, nice and close, you know? And that was it.
Was he sweaty?
No, not really.
Not really, no.
No.
I'd be sweaty.
I told Casey to wear his Chicken Duck.
Do you hear me? Yeah, there I am.
Yeah.
No?
I didn't wear
no.
Civilian.
Don't be that guy.
I didn't wear civilian clothes. But, yeah, it was pretty nice. And we hung around there till midnight, played a bunch, left with some cash, had a good time.
Cool.
Yeah, man.
That's great, guys. Glad you guys got to hang out and
yeah,
get out of
good
the house.
Time.
Yeah, see how we do that? We hung out as friends.
Oh, I'd love to. I'd love to. The problem with taking an infant to a casino and a Joey Diaz concert is that I don't think it would be looked highly upon.
Yeah, the infant probably wouldn't stay quiet.
No. Right. Well, I don't know that would be my problem.
No, probably not. I mean, there'd probably be other issues swirling around that, but, you know.
So when we got started, I looked at my phone and you said, what's wrong?
What's wrong?
So we have on the 100th episode, we're going to have the giveaway, you know?
11 more.
11 more episodes.
Get ready, Kyle.
Huge giveaway.
Huge.
So I
all
have
the shit that you don't want.
No, after Kyle texts that or messaged that on about the, so I have to wait another 12 weeks for
yeah.
this shit. He texts me and goes, I think I pissed Jimmy off. And I said, I don't know about that. And then he goes, I was going to write, oh, great, another giveaway with shit Casey doesn't want. Pretty much.
Yep.
That poster.
It's the exact same thing Jimmy said.
Like, that poster, it's a fucking really nice poster, but I ordered it it came with, like, this prize, like, a not a prize pack, but a mystery tube when I ordered this Predator poster. And the Predator poster came with, like, three.
What? What are you ordering Predator? You're fucking 37
Dude,
years old.
This fucking it's
all this for a frame for his pin.
Not the new Predator. I'm talking the original
that
Predator.
Doesn't change anything.
Dude, wait until you see this poster and you're going to think.
Oh, he's going to hang it up in his room under a black light.
No, it's not a black light poster, Ryan. Tell me that's not a badass poster.
It's a poster. It's a movie poster.
Yeah, there's only 100 of them made.
In 1987.
That doesn't make me want it anymore, Casey. Yeah.
It's a pretty badass like, poster. Morgani just texted me and said he'll call in about 40 minutes.
We can't keep this going for 40 minutes.
Oh, but anyway, so. Well,
who can we call?
For the.
Can't we just call somebody and fuck with them?
Sure.
Yeah, here.
No, wait.
I'll give you a phone number.
No,
to
wait,
call.
No, wait, no, wait.
I'm
so,
not calling Toby. He's probably.
Is it, which Toby?
Well, my Toby we couldn't call right now.
No.
I was going to tell you to call the Toby I know.
He's not going to be around.
So. So, to sign up for the giveaway,
yeah,
all you have to do is go to chickendugpod.com, uh-huh. And at the top of the screen, I have a sign-up form where you just put in your name and email address.
How many?
We have 15 people
Get
already
out.
Signed up, yeah.
Oh, wow.
But anyway,
people
so...
love free shit, man.
Yeah, exactly. And if you have kids, I mean, it's a lot of stuff, you know, for...
I have kids,
it's
man.
Loot crate stuff, you know? Well, not like... baby stuff. It's
oh, not
like,
shit that I would ever want.
No.
No, just stuff that other people would want.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
Good stuff.
Like Dan's restaurant gift certificates or something?
No, no, nothing like that. Okay. No, no. No, Loot Crate. Specifically Loot Crate.
Loot Crate's the way to go.
It's a good thing, man. See, I could actually sell this stuff on eBay and make money, but I'm giving it to our fans.
Oh.
You know what I mean?
Cool.
But anyway, so Squarespace now... The last three submissions that we got on the website, the last three times people signed up, it says, I get an email from Squarespace, says your most recent submission to the contest entry didn't save to your storage method on Google spreadsheets. So now I got to figure that out. But at least it sends me that they're signing up so I can add it to the spreadsheet myself. But I don't know. I got to take a look at that when I get home.
Yeah, get our spreadsheets in order, man.
I will.
That'll be on the up and up.
It will be.
People are already waiting to whistle blow.
Yeah, it will be.
Kyle's lining up.
I told Jimmy this story, Ryan. Last week I left my house to go down to Redner's to get some cheese for the dog.
Mm-hmm.
And I had just...
What kind of cheese?
Just processed cheese that we put her pills in. Not real cheese at all. It's just like packets of stuff that resembles cheese.
Okay.
But we put her pills in there.
So you danced a number.
Yes.
Okay.
Benadryl and other allergy medicine we have to give her. So I pull down to the light. May's sandwich shop is on the left. Across the street is just a driveway, and then Penn Avenue is, you know, runs the other way. I look across the street, and there's a woman down on her knees on a cell phone, and a man laying in the driveway. Now, and it's pouring down rain. So I pull over there, and like thinking maybe they need
something
help.
Wrong,
something
wrong, yeah,
you know? Yeah. I go over there, and I walk up. And the guy has a pool of blood under his head, roughly about that size, about as round as a basketball.
Okay. Why?
Like a lot of blood. And yeah. The first thing I say, I go, oh, shit.
Not alarming.
So I look at the lady and I'm like, is there anything I can do? She's like.
He's a goner.
Not really.
He's a goner.
And she was on the phone with 911, and so I left. And I realized that I probably shouldn't have, because I probably didn't make that guy feel that great.
Is there anything that I can do? No. All right. See you later.
I was like, oh, shit. Like, yeah. The first thing I thought was, like, did this guy get shot or something? Like, what the f*** happened? You know what I mean? Because it was a lot of blood. And,
did you ever find out what happened?
Yeah, he tripped off. He fell off the steps and hit his head. But when I came back through, like I went to Redner's and came back through and I went the same way. And the ambulance was there and he was sitting up and talking to the people. So I imagine he was just laying there because that lady told him just lay there. Don't move, you know, in case.
Yeah. He probably just got a nice little gash, little concuss, maybe.
My first reaction was probably not the best thing for that. That
dude.
Laying there. That's what I needed to hear.
Like, he's just looking at me like,
what, me?
Is it that bad?
Yeah. I thought I was wet from the rain.
Yeah.
40 minutes, huh? What are we at? 38?
Yeah.
Ooh, killing. Knocking down them numbers.
So, okay, we talked about Joey. I talked about Dan.
I got nothing.
So, you know, you complain about your 50 Cent Frosty.
Yeah, they started. They're 50 cents now.
Did they give it to you?
No, I must have been like 2 days late.
Oh, okay. I wanted Jeff to be here for this because he's always bitching and complaining about the fast food restaurants, how they don't take care of him, you know?
Everything.
And everything's always wrong. Well, yesterday I went to Wendy's and I had to wait like 2 minutes. It wasn't even like, I didn't even think it was a long time, but the guy that gave me my food apologized like 4 times for taking so long. And I was like, no, you know, no big deal, man. It's fine. As I'm pulling away, I'm looking in the bag just to see if everything was there. And everything.
Another $1,000.
Everything was there. Like, I'm looking in the bag. And this guy, the guy at the window goes, yo, yo, man. Hey, hey, hey. He's like yelling at me to come back. Right. So I stop. And he goes, oh, here. This is for waiting. Free Frosty. No, not even a small one. It was like a medium Frosty. But it was chocolate, so I just pulled up and threw it in the trash.
Oh, man.
No, I ate that chocolate Frosty.
It was good.
It was pretty good. I mean, I'm not going to lie. It wasn't as good as the vanilla. But I actually thought about driving back around and saying, hey, you gave me the wrong Frosty. I ordered a vanilla.
That's no fuck with him. I had a Frosty yesterday. Chocolate. It was delicious. And it was 50 cents.
They're not bad.
No, they're not. I might go have one today. It's the only way I can get him to sleep driving around. What do you got? I have a wedding coming up yesterday. One of our listeners got married.
Oh, yeah. Amanda. Congratulations, Amanda. Amanda.
Yeah. Devin's in the wedding. Should be fun for everybody. I'm going to try to not get escorted out. So, Amanda, if you're listening, I'm sorry.
So maybe we might not record next week.
You guys can. No, we will.
So I posted the picture of me and Joey on Facebook, and our listener Nick Kratulski, he wrote, "No, Uncle Joey must live."
He gets it.
I didn't even think of that the whole time.
Yeah.
I had to reassure Nick that curses don't work on Santeria magic, Cuban magic.
mostly just musicians. That's not really.
No, Adam West.
Oh, I forgot about Adam West.
Oh, yeah.
Dead.
Yeah.
And then I had forgotten about, remember the Colonel? The Colonel Bruce Hampton.
Yeah, you were there, and then he was gone. That was what started it, wasn't it?
Now I feel like an accomplice. I took the picture.
Adam West started it.
Really? It was a couple months, though. Maybe it's gone.
Yeah, hopefully it's gone.
We'll know.
Because Richard Lewis would have been dead by now.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean,
yeah. I mean, I didn't touch him, but.
Joey, I hope Joey's not listening to this episode.
Yeah.
So that he's fearing for his life now.
Sorry, Joey.
Joey doesn't fear anything.
Wow.
Last week we went to, no, 2 weeks ago now, we went to the Outlaw Music Festival at the Hershey Park Stadium.
Yeah.
But, I got to thank Kevin Brett. We went to the, we went over to the concert, and Barbara and I had really good seats, and Kevin came out from backstage and gave us backstage passes, and Barbara didn't want to go backstage, but I went back and hung out with Kevin a little while.
Exactly
so
what I
we went on to the Willie's Reserve
I
bus.
I love my life. Go ahead.
And I had some of the Willie's Remedy coffee that isn't available yet.
Right.
It's CBD infused, and it's delicious. It's really good.
No THC in it?
Nope, just CBD. And I double-checked with like 30 people that were on that bus. I'm like, there's nothing else in this, right? I'm like, I got shit to do. I don't want to be drinking
Erica,
a couple fucking.
Sooner or later, if you drink enough of that, you'd fail a drug test.
What? The CBD stuff?
Yeah, no.
I don't think so.
Yeah. Yeah.
No.
Is that just if you...
I don't know.
There's no THC in it at all. Not just like trace...
Just the
amounts.
CBD, as far as I know.
Cool. What about the 14 joints that you stuff in your mouth there, dude? At the fucking joint buffet.
I don't get drug tested, so...
For you, the listeners of Saturdays with Chicken Duck... Hotels.com is offering $30 off select hotel stays of $250 or more when you go to usehotels.com/chickenduck and you use code LISTEN30. With Hotels.com, you can get rewarded basically everywhere, from seaside cabins in Portland to tree houses in Thailand to five-star resorts in Mexico. Hotels.com has all the options you're searching for in one place. And for every 10 nights you stay, you get one free that you can use to do you at endless properties. Hotel.com's deals come with access to instant savings too. Hotels.com. You do you and get rewarded. Free nights don't include taxes and fees. Again, you can save $30 off selected hotel stays of $250 or more when you go to usehotels.com/chickenduck and you use code LISTEN30.
I've been busy. My mom had a reconstructive knee surgery.
Ew.
Tuesday. And so she's been out of it,
mm-hmm.
You know, not being able to move and everything. So I've been
hoping not.
Yeah, I've been doing what I can. I've been real busy.
What was that you made last night that you sent me the pictures of?
It was like a chicken Alfredo. It was a pasta chicken.
With veggies, broccoli in there, I saw.
Yeah.
Looked pretty tasty.
Doing a little chicken parmesan myself tonight.
Well, yeah, it was more of a parmesan cheese sauce than it was an Alfredo. I made it myself, so.
Mm. Have you been working on the...
egg rolls?
No, the barbecue, the Vietnamese barbecue sauce. Yeah,
I've been experimenting.
Yeah,
I've been experimenting.
Did you get a bottle of ketchup and a bottle of barbecue sauce and put them together and
make
some sriracha in there, and there you go.
Yeah, I even added a little bit of Worcestershire sauce.
Worcestershire,
just a spot.
Yeah, it's pronounced Worcestershire.
Worcestershire.
How about Ozarks?
Awesome.
Talk about
so
who hasn't seen
I've been. Oh, I was watching. I mean, I just started it, so I'm like season one, episode four. I think.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I don't. You can't talk about that show. Because
no.
It'll ruin everything.
Yeah.
Like shit happens. So it doesn't happen slow, but it just certain things happen in an episode, and I wouldn't want to ruin it.
Yeah. It's good. It's good. I was up late last night watching it.
Everyone dies.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, I can tell you everyone dies. TMJ?
Yeah. I'm not sure if I'm going to post that before. Should I post that after this episode? Like add it on to the end of this episode?
Post what?
My interview with Tom Morris on
Tuesday.
Did you
do it?
Not now, no, but he's supposed to call me on Tuesday.
Oh, I thought you were doing it this past Thursday.
No, Tuesday.
And he's calling this number.
Yes.
So you're just going to log into my Skype.
Yeah.
And you have a way to record.
Yep.
That should be fun.
I have Audacity. I mean, I'm going to need you to call me and make sure that it works on.
Maybe we should do that before Tuesday.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like today or tomorrow.
Hopefully.
Yeah, today or tomorrow would be good.
Yeah, they would be. Well, I mean.
Before Tuesday.
We should try last week.
Yeah, it should have been happened. It should have happened.
We should have tried Monday or Tuesday or Sunday even of last week. So figure out how we can tell ourselves that. The time paradox in this podcast is just crippling sometimes.
It's you know weird. What? You should find the Quantum Leap guy and have him call in. See if he can explain there.
Scott Bakula.
He just shows up randomly to play.
He was just an actor in a fake television show.
Really?
Yeah, if we really want to talk to somebody, we should talk to the guy that was Mr. Feeney.
How do you know this?
Well, I mean, he was a car for most of his career.
We could talk to Mr. Feeney. He's going to be at that.
I'm not paying a fucking $45 to go talk to a guy that was on TV 20 years ago. Thanks.
Kevin Nash is going to be there, too. Scott Hall.
So's Kevin from The Office. I don't...
Kevin from The Office isn't going to be there.
Yeah, he is.
What?
At the Keystone Comic Con?
No. Oh. This is the New Jersey Horror Con.
Oh. No. I don't think Kevin from The Office made an appearance there.
Zach was telling me about one, too. It's called the something con in Oaks. And he... Sergeant Slaughter is going to... Sergeant Slaughter is at the top of the list. That's how good...
That's their headliner.
And, like, the second one did the voice for the... like, Optimus Prime in the 80s cartoon.
That's great. Somebody's fucking uncle's brother. Oh, that smells cotton candy.
It's melon lush. Mm. Pretty good. So the floor was not curved.
No, Ryan. I have to say it wasn't. The Parks Casino where we saw Joey. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ryan thought that if you would have put a marble in the center of the room,
like
that it would have just
like a
weeble wobble.
It felt like the floor was a little.
Jesus Christ!
No, that was a flat floor.
I did you take your marbles and verify it?
No, but I said if you put a marble down, it's not going to move. It's a flat floor. Like it wasn't sloped at all. You know what I mean?
But you didn't test it. You just said that out loud.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was.
It could have been sloped. I really.
It wasn't though.
But it could have been.
I mean, it
but you
should
didn't have
be.
Any marbles with you.
No, I always have a marble or two, yeah, but I didn't need to prove that because I knew I was right. I've been a roofer for many years. I can tell a flat surface.
Oh, I didn't know. I didn't know the roofing was going to get drug into it, but okay.
When we sat down.
Well, roof is like kind of the same thing as a floor. It's just
on top of the house instead of underneath it. Yeah, exactly. They're exactly the same.
So, but when we sat down in our
seats,
right? The
roof are exactly the same.
There wasn't anybody in front of us yet. We were at the end. And the first thing I said to Casey was, I hope that really tall people don't sit right in front of us.
I'd imagine you have that hope a lot.
Every time. Yeah, everywhere I go, yeah. But what do you know? The people finally come strolling in. And, I mean, these two guys were taller than Casey.
Here again, though, based on your height, the chances of you getting somebody sitting in front of you that are taller than you are higher.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're like 98%.
Right.
But I was hoping someone like extra tall wasn't going to sit there. And the two that did,
dude,
taller than Casey.
They're really
huge. Yeah.
Well, that's like me sitting on an airplane. I always get somebody fatter than me somehow sitting next to me.
You need to start flying first class.
I need to start loosening weight.
Well, no, if you want to get bigger, you just fly first class.
Get more expensive tickets.
But yeah, the seats there. I mean, it was a nice. That was a nice place to see a show.
Parks.
Yeah, but the seats they're not slant like. No, they weren't that comfortable. No, but like the people in the back are at the same level as the people in the front. You know what I mean?
Was he on an elevated stage?
Yeah, but there's no like most places have at least a little bit of a slope, so the people in the back are.
There's the slope.
Yeah, I mean, most places do. Did you take your marbles out?
That's why I mentioned about the marbles.
Take your marbles next time.
Next time I will. And also,
you got your slope marbles today?
Also,
I don't.
No.
Parks Casino, if you're listening,
home without him.
I will redesign your room for you.
Oh, but he's a roofer.
Yeah, so I can design the insides of rooms.
Especially floors, because they're so similar to
roofs.
They
are, especially if you slope them.
And put... And put some sort of rubber down on top of them, I guess.
We could go with the TPO.
Shingle your entire floor.
But yeah, the seats, they weren't staggered either. There were straight rows of seats.
Son of a bitch.
They should stagger. So Ryan wouldn't have had a problem if someone taller did sit in front of him.
What if they would have staggered them? You wouldn't have gotten seats because it would have been sold out. They wouldn't have had enough chairs.
It was sold out. I ordered my tickets like immediately as soon as they went on sale.
You're good.
How would that affect anything if they were staggered?
Money. Maybe they have to sell a certain amount of...
I don't think you understand what I mean by staggered.
Until I have the marble test data, I don't care what you're saying.
The marble has nothing to do with the seats, though.
To you. The marble has everything to do with the seats to us. Everything. If the marble slopes...
It's a world of difference.
If the marble slopes, then what? What if it doesn't? What if I'm right and the floor is flat? Then what?
But we already have agreed that we need to see the data. Somebody needs to do the legwork. Do you know anybody?
I know a guy. I can get you a guy.
Yeah. Well.
So we watched the original Longest Yard last night.
with Bert.
Yeah, man, it was good. Did you ever see it? Mm-hmm. Really good. I was surprised. Did you ever see it, Ryan?
I did.
The original.
Mm-hmm.
Make you tear up.
A little bit.
Yeah, a little bit.
It's a heartbreaker.
But I'd like to know, in the new one, did they go
The new one, as in the new one with Adam Sandler.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like the new one from 15 years ago. Did they go past the point after the game? What happens after the game? Does he spend another 30 years in prison for disobeying the warden? Or what happens?
I don't know.
I don't know.
Because you remember the warden said that if he won
that movie that I barely cared about 15 years ago. Why would I remember it now? I don't know. I'll go watch it today.
Because in the old one, they just show like Bert and the guy going back into the prison or going, you know, wherever. So
it's like still motion end of the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So 70s. Is he would be out of prison now if he would have still been in there for 30 years.
Are you asking me if Burt Reynolds was a real person and actually in jail when that movie was made, if he'd be out by now?
Yeah.
Is that the question you're posing me? Is Jimmy ready to call in yet? Because that sounds like something he'd be willing to answer. Yes. The amount of time from now to when that movie was made is greater than 30 years. So, yes, he would be out. No.
Unless, hear me out.
Unless
he played more games of football that the warden told him to lose, and he actually won.
So you think he doubled down on his game? I think
I would have liked to see a sequel.
Yeah,
of a movie I just saw last night for the first time.
another 15 years. The math works out, and Adam, he'll be out. I mean, his character. Did he go back to jail?
I don't know. That's what I'm asking. I don't remember it, the new one.
I don't either. I don't care. How are we even talking about this?
Because Burt Reynolds was the fucking man, that's why.
Right, but, I mean, the Longest Yard, that's where we're going. Not Smokey.
Nah, Smokey's... Right. I didn't even get into that yet.
Right.
I have a list of Burt Reynolds movies on my watch list for the week. I got a long flight tomorrow.
What was the one with the monkey? Or the chimp?
That was Clint Eastwood.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. I believe, right?
Trouble.
I thought Bert did one with him.
I think he's right. I think you're right, Case.
That was Clint Eastwood and the Cadillac, right? The pink Cadillac?
Yeah.
Mm. Am I right?
Yeah.
What
was it called?
Could be right. I think
it's called Every Which Way But Loose. Clint.
Now are you going to Google Burt Reynolds monkey? What do you think about, I know it's been a while now, but that guy Jeffrey Owens, do you know who I'm talking about? The one that got...
the guy in the... that got work shamed.
Yes. Did you see any of his interviews after that?
No. I only heard that he was offered a job by Tyler Perry, and that's all I cared to keep reading.
He went on a lot of talk shows after that.
Shocking.
After he got work shamed.
Right. Because he was so emotionally tormented.
He didn't seem to be.
No, but that was why he quit his job.
Yeah, I guess. But he said that no matter what job you do, that they're all created equal.
Right. Well, whatever.
Well, how do you feel about that?
I'd like to think that I would rather a heart surgeon like my Aunt Carrie...
Yeah,
is, you know, doing heart surgery rather than a door salesman like me.
Saving people's lives.
I'd have to put her, like, if we were somewhere and they were like, all right, well, who's a doctor? All right, she's a doctor. Okay, you're a doctor too? Okay, you too. Teachers, who's the teachers? Oh, okay, teachers are good. I don't think they'd get the door salesman for probably a couple hours. So, yeah.
Days, maybe.
I gotta disagree with my boy Jeffrey Owens.
Yeah, I disagree as well.
I would think, I don't, here's the other end of the thing. Like, I don't think acting is a job that you would think is, I mean, I don't think acting is important. I don't think it's important. Come at me. It's never saved anybody's life.
No, I agree with you.
I think they inflate their egos to the point where everything has to revolve around them, and they're a gaggle of goofy, screaming children, you know, following them around. But
what do I care? Yeah, I know. I agree with you, but don't you think, I mean, entertainers or actors or whatever, they do help.
How?
They give you enjoyment. If we had nothing to watch on Netflix, you know, if we didn't have Jason Bateman and the Ozarks,
my life would go on. I apologize, but I'd imagine Jason Bateman feels the same way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't be as entertaining.
I guess not.
Right? I think maybe we would just adapt and find something else to entertain ourselves.
You know, if life sucked a little bit more, maybe Netflix wouldn't even be a thing. And nobody'd really care that they didn't have Netflix. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I try to, you know, not take things for granted. Like Jason Bateman and Ozarks. No, I don't care. I really don't care. I think it's bullshit that they shamed him for packing groceries.
Yes, absolutely. I think the whole, like...
They should have shamed him for changing his shirt and taking a shave.
Yeah, he shouldn't... Like, why didn't his manager say, why you look like that today? Yeah.
But other than that, I mean, go to work, do your job. It's what you're supposed to do. Where is Yimbo?
I don't know.
I'm getting the old heartburn.
I'm about done.
Really? Me too.
I'm really tired.
Well, join us next week. Jimbo's calling in. Mike Buschetti's calling in. We're calling out to Jim Sharkey. And we're going to try to figure out if Casey talked to Tom Morris Jr. And what that was all about.
You may hear that as soon as this is over.
Oh, wow.
It may be a continuation of this episode.
So listen to Casey and Tom Morris Jr. After the podcast. And come back next week and we'll talk to more people that are interesting more so than us. It's been emotional. Stop back next week. Goodbye.
Hey, folks, this is Casey with Saturdays with Chicken Duck. Joining me today is Jeff Loper.
How's it going?
And on the phone with us is former Washington, D.C. Special Police Officer, crime reporter, and co-host of Live PD on the A&E Network, Tom Morris Jr.
What's up, Nathan?
Thanks for calling us today, Tom.
My pleasure, man. Appreciate what you guys do for us.
So let's get into a little bit of your background. I don't think a lot of people know everything there is to know about Tom Morris. So we were just chatting before we got started here. You grew up outside of Philadelphia?
When I was five, we moved to Philadelphia. My dad went to grad school to get his master's degree in theology at Eastern Baptist Theological Seminary on City Avenue. It was called City Line Avenue back then. And so I started school in Philly. I was there till fifth grade. We moved to West Philly in 62 or 63, and I actually went to the elementary school that Will Smith went to, Harrington Elementary. A little bit ahead of Will Smith, but same school. And then we moved to Cincinnati and lived there for 5 years. And my dad pastored a church there. And then when I was 15, we moved back to Virginia, where we were originally from, where he took a church down there, and we stayed there. So I kind of grew up in Philadelphia, Virginia, and Cincinnati, three different places. And I graduated from Norfolk State University in 1980, came straight to D.C., and by 81, I was in the White House Press Corps. Started out as a courier, actually, running videotape from the Hill, the crews on the Hill, and at the White House back to the Bureau at the National Press Building. And I learned how to do audio while hanging out, waiting for the tapes with the crews. And I became a sound man. And after about 2 years of that, I became a cameraman. And then I became a field producer. And back then, I worked for a production company called Broadcast News Service. And we did, in addition to national news work for clients, we also did press junkets for movies. So I worked on press junkets for movies like Superman with Christopher Reeve and Young Doctors in Love with Penny Marshall and Against All Odds with Jeff Bridges and lots of different movie junkets. Got to meet a lot of movie stars. Witches of Eastwick. I was in the room with Cher and Susan Sarandon and Michelle Pfeiffer for an entire day of interviews with critics. And that was all in the early 80s. Then I kind of got bored with it and was looking in the Washington Post one day and saw an ad that said Overseas Security Embassy Task Group. So then, the operative word for me was overseas, because I'd always wanted to go abroad and have Hemingway-esque adventures, you know, of danger and romance and things of that nature. And so I saw this ad and it said Embassy Task Group, Overseas Security. So I went over to Roslyn, Virginia, to this office building and applied. And they were hiring. This was 1987, actually. And they were hiring people that were coming out of the military or former police officers. And I was neither. Obviously, my background was, you know, in television. But I went through a series of interviews with about four different people, and I just told them all the same thing. They said, well, you haven't been in the military or the police. I said, nope, but you're going to train us to do the same job, right? So what difference does it make? That was my answer was, hey, if you're going to teach us all to do this thing, which is to protect these embassies that are under construction from being bugged and compromised, like the one in Moscow. They had discovered that the embassy in Moscow had been built by Russian contractors in the 70s or whenever, and that it was bugged from top to bottom. The rebar, everything was listening devices. So they had passed the Omnibus Anti-Terrorism Act of 86 and decided that they needed to train a force of people to deploy to embassies and consulates around the world to make sure they were not compromised while they were being built from scratch or being upgraded and hardened. So that was just it. I just taught my way in there, and I was the only person that got into the program that wasn't former military police. And I actually used my journalism skills there. I started a newsletter because we were called Cleared American Guards, and I started the CAG newsletter, and which went out to all the sites around the world where all the CAG guards were. And I got sent to Mogadishu, Somalia, when my top secret clearance came through. So I arrived in Mogadishu at the embassy under construction there in March of 88. And in May of 88, 2 months later, the Civil War broke out. So I was there during the first year of the Somali Civil War. And things were getting pretty hot towards the end of my contract year, and I decided I was getting out of there. So I did not renew my contract. I came back to the States. But since I had ventured off into that level of work with top secret clearance and working for the government and security, I decided to continue with that. So I went to the Department of Energy headquarters here in D.C., and I became a nuclear security officer. So that was my first armed law enforcement job, was actually DOE. And not when you have a top secret clearance, but then you have to have a clearance above top secret, which is a Q-level clearance. And the Q-level clearance is a nuclear clearance. So it's one of the highest clearances you can have. So I did that for almost 2.5 years. And then one day, randomly, my wife and I were visiting a friend of mine in Bethesda, Maryland, who's a professional golf photographer named Chris John. And my wife was into landscaping. And when we were about to leave Chris's house, she remarked about the neighbor's landscaping across the street. And he said, oh, yeah, that guy, he's the executive producer of America's Most Wanted. I said, really? I said, wow, Chris, you know, my background is in television. I would love to work for that show. I said, do you know him? He said, yeah, as a matter of fact, I'm having breakfast with him tomorrow. And I just so happened to have my resume in the car with me. So I gave it to Chris. 3 weeks later, America's Most Wanted called me. He brought me in and gave me a murder case to research, fly out, do the interviews with the victims, relatives, and the cops on the case in Brooklyn. It was a guy named Irving Razor Jones, who murdered his ex-wife and her brother in East New York, Brooklyn. I had never done this kind of journalism before. I'd always been on the technical side as a cameraman, you know, sound man. I'd never done any producing and writing for television, but I figured it out. You know what I mean? It's like, okay. So I went up there. I did the story. We reenacted everything. We put it on, and we caught Irving Razor Jones within a couple of days of the broadcast. And they kept giving me more cases as a freelancer. And after about 6 months or so, they hired me as a full-time producer. So I became a producer for America's Most Wanted in 93. And 3 years into that, the executive producer looked at me one day and said, you know, I think you'd be good on TV. I was like, okay. So,
what in the world? Let me just ask you real quick. How old were you when you got the to be a producer then for America's Most Wanted?
Let's see. Let me think. Let me do the math here. How old was I? Let's see.
Because all what's crazy?
I was 41. I was 41 when I When I appeared on television for the first time, I was 41.
Because like, what's crazy is that I'm listening to this, which is extremely fascinating, that you went from going to college for like TV stuff and communications and just working behind the scenes, you know, whatever, to all of a sudden you're like, nah, I'm going to be security overseas, to, you know, and then all of a sudden you're like, nah, I'm going to go back to TV. Like, this is crazy to me. It's not a normal like track that someone would take, you would think.
No, it really hasn't been. But, you know, I just look at it like God has kind of ordered my steps as I've gone. And when opportunities came, I was able to capitalize on them. And even if I didn't know what I was doing, I was able to figure it out pretty quickly and then become competent at whatever it was. So, yeah, in 97, I made my television debut in front of camera in prime time on America's Most Wanted, doing a murder case right near where I live in Greenbelt, Maryland. From there, I continued on until the show ended. I was with America's Most Wanted for about 900 episodes, and I was there until it ended for good in 2012. Then I had to reinvent my life all over again, because now I was like 54 years old, whatever, and all of a sudden I'd gone from, you know, making primetime TV money to zero. You know what I mean? Like, all of a sudden, it all came to a screeching halt. You know, you think you've saved enough money, and you find out once you stop making money that you haven't saved enough. You know, so I said, well, what am I going to do now? So I decided, well, I started to become a Metropolitan Police officer because they didn't have an age cutoff for that. And I went to the actual orientation. Then I said to myself, I don't really feel like going through 6 months of all this training. I just didn't think that was the right thing for me. But the path of becoming a special police officer in D.C., which you're actually sworn and commissioned by MPD, is a shorter path. And so I took that path and went through the training and became an SPO and got assigned to a place called Tyler House, which is in a public housing complex of about five different complexes that make up one massive complex called Sursum Quarter. And Sursum Quarter is actually only about 8 blocks from the Capitol. You can see the Capitol Dome from Sursum Quarter, from the Tyler House, and but it was a pretty notorious place for drug dealing and violence, and I went in there on the night shift in the summer of 2013, so I was literally like out there in the mix all night long, on foot, no car, on foot patrol, in the projects with a gun and a badge and mace and
man. The night shift's probably the worst shift, right? That's when all the crazies come out.
The action comes off. Nighttime in the summertime, man. I mean, we had all kinds of stuff went on. I never forget the first night I was on foot patrols with this kid named Abner, and he was this crazy. He was like a white dude from Detroit who was like from the hood, though. You know what I mean? Remember that movie with Mark Wahlberg and his black brothers?
Yes.
In Detroit? Yeah, well, this guy was that guy. Abner was that guy, okay? And he had just come back. He had been in Iraq where he just was on a – he was on some sort of squad where they hunted down high-value insurgent targets and killed them. He was crazy. This dude was, completely nuts. And I'm out walking around. He's showing me my first night on the job. He's showing me – where we put patrol around through the projects and whatnot. And all of a sudden, I hear this explosion, like, boom! I jump, I'm like, what the hell? And he's like, oh, don't worry about that, man. I said, what do you mean? He said, that's just a half stick. I said, what do you mean a half stick? He said, half stick of dynamite. Half stick of dynamite. They throw those around here. I'm like, what? What do you mean they throw those around here? We're 8 blocks from the Congress. The Capitol is up the street. You tell me they throw dynamite sticks around here? He's like, yeah, they do. Don't worry about it. I'm like, okay. Welcome to the hood.
Like, wow.
So, and I tell you this story because about a month later, it was I was standing on the corner of North Capitol and Florida Avenue one night, and there's a car sitting at the light across the street on North Capitol, and I see a guy come running down the street with sparks coming out of his hand, like he's got a lit fuse, right? And he runs up to the corner and throws this thing into one of the city trash cans, which are both, they're wrought iron frame, and they're bolted down to the sidewalk. And he throws this thing in this trash can, and it explodes, and the trash can shoots up in the air. The car that's sitting at the light next to it is disabled. The guy jumps out of the car and chases after the guy, but he doesn't catch him. And I'm just standing there looking like, I don't believe what I just saw. I just saw a dude blow up a corner with an explosive device. So I expect like ATF and Homeland Security to be showing up any second. You know what I mean? I mean, we're 8 blocks from the Capitol.
Literally. Yeah, you're in D.C. You would have thought that the smallest thing, it'd be like helicopters showing up and stuff.
Dude, the car that got blown up, the dude was facing, he could see the Capitol Dome when he got blown up, okay? I'm just like, I expect everybody to show up, right? Nope. Couple of MPD cars show up, few officers. They tow the guy's car away. Eventually, he comes walking down the street heading to the metro because he has to catch the subway to get home. And I'm like, I asked Justin, dude, I said, I saw what happened. He said, yeah, man, guy. So I was just sitting at the light and all of a sudden, boom, and it blew up my radiator, whatever. And I'm like, wow. So a few weeks later, we had a guy that there was a nightclub across the street. And this guy was a white guy who went to this club and then came over onto the hood side of North Capitol and said something out of his mouth to a black girl who was on the corner with some other dudes. And when I got there, he was unconscious, bleeding from the head. So, and there wasn't nobody else in sight. So two of the same MPD cops showed up that had responded to that car explosion thing a few weeks before. And after we got done, you know, with this case and this crime scene here, and they took the guy to the hospital and everything, I asked him, I said, hey, man, y'all were out here for that car that got blown up. He said, yeah. I said, how come ATF and, Homeland Security, nobody showed up but MPD? He said, that's because this is over here. He said, we had the same thing happen in the alley up on Capitol Hill, and everybody showed up. He said, dudes in spacesuits showed up, and trucks with radar domes on top showed up. He said, over here, it's no big deal. He said, up there where, you know, white people live on Capitol Hill. He said, nah, they do it up there too sometimes, but it's a whole different response. So that's just one of our hood story. So, but yeah, it was a good experience. And from there, I actually got hired into the Uniform Division of Diplomatic Security at the end of that year, and I became a Uniform Diplomatic Security Officer at Maine State. So ironically, I ended up my tenure there as part of the Special Operations Unit 3 years later. I was actually guarding the Secretary of State when I was hired away from there to become a declassification analyst for the Department of Navy. And that's what I was doing when the phone rang. And Kara Kurtz, my old AMW colleague, called me and said, hey, we've got this new show called Live PD. Why don't you come to New York and audition for it? And I'm like, okay. And the rest is history.
Wow. That's fantastic. That's
a crazy story is how you got onto Live PD. So you never... when you started out of college, you had never expected, like, it wasn't in your future to be a law enforcement officer or anything like that out of college.
Well, here's the irony of it all. When I was in high school, I wrote to the FBI because I wanted to be an FBI. And I was into two things. I was into writing. I started winning awards for writing when I was like in the sixth grade. And so I was a writer, but I also was interested in law enforcement. And so I wrote to the FBI when I was like a senior in high school saying I wanted to be an FBI agent, and I got a letter back. It was actually signed by J. Edgar Hoover. It's 1974. Said, you know, appreciate your interest in the FBI. FBI agents have to have a college degree. And I was planning on going to college anyway. So after you get your degree, contact us again and, you know, apply for FBI. Well, I went to school and majored in my second passion, which was mass communications journalism, and so ended up going into a career in television and journalism first. So, but then later in life, I got to be law enforcement too. So it kind of all came full circle.
Yeah, you kind of got to do best of both worlds kind of deal.
Yeah,
that's awesome. So now you're one of the hosts, I guess. Now is that what you'd say, host of Live PD?
I'm a co-host, crime analyst.
Okay. So why don't you tell us about Live PD? Like, just what is it as a show?
Live PD is like NFL Red Zone with cops. It's like we're following multiple law enforcement jurisdictions, police and sheriffs around the country in real time on Friday, Saturday night from 9 to midnight. And we cut in and out of what's going on here in Pasco County, Florida, to go here to Greene County, Missouri, to go here to Richland County, South Carolina, and Columbia, South Carolina. And we just bounce around, and Dan Abrams is the host, and he holds it all together. He's got a lot of moving parts he has to keep up with. Sticks, my fellow Prime Man List and myself, we lend the color commentary to what's going on. We provide insights into what people are seeing, why this is being done, what this means. Sometimes it's humorous and funny. Sometimes it's dead serious. And it's just I look forward to it every show, because we don't know what's going to happen next any more than you do at home.
Right.
I mean, we're all
right.
Sitting there like, what are we going to see tonight? You know, what has America got in store tonight? We know we're going to see some shirtless Americans. If it's warm, we know we're going to see some shirtless Americans. That's for certain. We'll probably see some animals. I actually keep a little – people wonder what I'm writing on my little notepad. I have a notebook there. Uh-huh. I've taken notes for every single show since the first episode I came on. I've taken notes. And
wow.
I take notes to keep – so I make observations and notes. So if they come to talk about something, you know, I can refer to my notes. You know,
right.
Maybe it's an hour later and we're going back to a scene. Well, at least I'll have some notes that refresh me on what that scene, what was happening at that particular traffic stop in that particular place or whatever. So I take meticulous notes, and I even note what animals we see in each show. I mean, we see all kinds of animals. I mean, it's so many different things that you see on Live PD that are interesting. And the fans are just amazing. I mean, America's Most Wanted was the original reality crime show, and it had an amazing following. I mean, when America's Most Wanted went off the air after 25 years, it had 4 million viewers on Saturday night.
Wow. Wow.
When it got canceled.
Yeah.
And at its peak in the 90s, before people had, you know, 1,000 channels or Fios, the viewership was as high as 7, 8 million. So when I came to Live PD, about 2 weeks after I came on the show, it hit 1 million viewers. And from there, I told everybody, I said by summer, we'll hit 2 million. I knew it. I could just tell by the Twitter traffic, the enthusiasm that people were showing on social media. I'd experienced it before, and now I was experiencing it again, but in a different era, the era of social media. AMW, I remember when we first got our website in 2000, it was AMW.com. And that website generated a lot of activity. And actually, people were caught from tips that came into AMW.com over the next 12 years. And I was also happy that they allowed me to start doing missing children cases and wanted fugitives to continue the mission that Kara and I have been on during our America's Most Wanted years. Kara Kurtz is the head of Motivate Media. When you see on the credits that Live PD is a production of Big Fish Entertainment and Motivate Media. Well, Motivate Media is Kara Kurtz and her husband Brian's company. And Kara was an intern on AMW in 1997. So I met her when she was fresh out of college, and she was maybe 22 years old. And then, you know, in 2016, she calls me out of the blue and said, hey, come to New York and audition for this show and change my life, you know. So the moral of that story, guys, is be good to everybody, because even the lowest intern can someday be your boss.
That, and always have a resume in your car at all times.
Yeah, you know. But yeah, that's the truth, man. Kara changed my life with that phone call.
Wow. Well, I got to tell you, you relating the show to like an NFL red zone or whatever, is that made me laugh, because when I was watching it, I just was waiting for a moment for them to pause it, and then like a yellow circle to come out and start circling things. Like, if you see here, this guy's holding, you know, whatever. Like, it definitely felt like I was watching ESPN, but with police officers.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the reasons why it's so popular, I think, has to be because it's live. I mean, you guys don't edit anything, right? I mean, and with today's day and age, everybody wants to see what's happening now, and they don't want to be like, think it's, you know, oh, they edited out the bad stuff or whatever. Is there a like behind the scenes reason or purpose for the show actually being out there now? Like, was it something that they wanted to maybe come out with a show where they could show, you know, that police are people too, kind of thing?
I think Dan Cesario, the head of Big Fish, who created the show, along with working with Kara Motivate. I think there was so much discussion going on in 2016, 2015, you know, really since forever, really, about policing. But in the last few years, policing has really come under a lot of scrutiny for a lot of reasons. And I think Dan Cesario just said, hey, what would it be like if we could actually show what policing is like live? I mean, it's a very simple concept, and people could see and judge for themselves what they're seeing.
Right.
And so, you know, A&E bought into the idea, started up as a 6-episode pilot. I think I came in on episode 8, and it just went from there.
I mean, I think it's a great show. I'm actually happy that it's out there. I have friends who are police officers. My neighbor's a state cop. I have 2 stepbrothers that are cops. My ex-stepdad was a detective, is now a judge. So, like, there's so many times where when you see a lot of stuff on the news or people on social media and stuff blowing things up, sometimes out of proportion, if you don't know a police officer personally, that you could maybe even hear some of the stories that they tell, then you don't really kind of understand a little bit about some of the nonsense that they see. Like you talked about the guy running around with dynamite. You know what I mean? Like, who would have thought you would ever even see that? And some of the stories that, like, my brothers tell me, I'm just like, are you serious? You know, like, it's just, you don't hear about that stuff, you know? So it's great to have a show where you can see some of that stuff pop up. And like you said, because it's live and because nobody knows what's going to happen, you know, you never know if it's going to be a guy with dynamite or a guy chasing a peacock down the street, you know?
Yeah, you don't. I mean, it's just interesting. I mean, America, and it's also sort of like a travel guide, because you get to travel around the country with us for 3 hours. Let's go from Pasco, Florida, where they got alligators and palm trees, to Green County, Missouri, where you've got people like Robert in his trailer threatening to shoot the cops, whose pregnant girlfriend is sitting there, and looks like she might be his first cousin. It's like a travel log. I mean, we're going from here to there. You get to see how the police in this place do their job versus you see people that get arrested in one jurisdiction for something that walk and go home in Warwick. Like in Warwick, I've seen a whole bunch of drunk people in Warwick that they just took home.
I'm glad you brought that up. I was going to ask you, seeing all the, you know, doing it now for so long and actually having a background in different law enforcement stuff like that, and having traveled yourself, have you noticed any big differences in the law enforcement across the United States? You know,
definitely. They're different. States have different laws, first of all. There are things I see people do and get away with in Texas, for example, that in Maryland, there's no way. I'll give you a good example. There was a fight in Pasco where a guy got hit in the head with a brick, and the cops showed up, and these guys were like, hey, we're in our front yard, and this kid from down the street who's been a problem in the neighborhood forever came down here and hit my friend in the head with a brick. And the guy's bleeding from his head, he's got a dent inside his head from the corner of the brick. So they go down the street to the other house where the attacker lives. They get there, his sister's sitting on the steps. She's all scraped up and bloodied a little bit. And she says she went down there and those guys roughed her up and slammed her down on the street. Now, I'm sitting there in my chair on the set with Sticks and Dan. And I'm like, okay, I'm pretty sure somebody's going to jail here. At the very least, dude who hit dude in the head with the brick, okay?
Right. Assault. Yeah.
Nobody went to jail. They asked them both, do you want to press charge against each other? And they all said no, and the police left. And I was like, what?
Yeah, what? Both attacks offset each other, therefore there was, you know, no flag on the play? What the hell?
No flag on the play. Dude, there's no way where I live in Maryland or in most states, and at least in the Northeast, I can't imagine that you could hit somebody in the head with a brick and not be charged with assault. But down there, it was a whole different thing. It's like, what do y'all want to do? You know? And you look at out in Nye County, you see things that, you know, out in Nevada, you see things. I mean, anybody can carry a gun in their car in Nevada. Weed is legal in Nevada. So you see the differences in police culture, police protocols, laws that are on the books in these various jurisdictions. America's a very diverse place in terms of the law.
Yeah, and I'm sure that is probably one of the reasons why it's so hard to, you know, police the entire nation, because you have to do it differently everywhere. You know, it really can't be the same thing all over the place.
No.
Oh, here, I want to ask you this question. So what are your thoughts about ex-military becoming police officers? Because I know from an aviation standpoint, I was in the military myself. I was in the Air Force, enlisted, whatever, got medically discharged. Then I got my pilot license on the civilian side. But when I was getting my pilot license, one of the things that was brought up to me was the fact that in the aviation world, if you flew in the military, if you were a military pilot, it sort of was a negative mark when you went to apply for a job as an airline pilot, because military usually have this, you know, a sense of cockiness, a little bit of a narcissism to them that you know, an airline doesn't want you to have. They don't want you to be like, oh, I can fly through that storm. You know what I'm saying? They want you to be more cautious. And so do you think it's a good or a bad thing to have, say, an ex-military personnel be a police officer as well?
No, and I think that there are an awful lot of, I know from my own personal experience, just like the guy I told you about, Abner, who was breaking me in when I was a SPO. I mean, he came from he'd been in Iraq in combat, you know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, everywhere I've worked in law enforcement, DOE, State Department, and SPO, they've all been a ton of people that were former military. I mean, probably 50% at least. So I don't think that's a disqualifier by any means. I think there are an awful lot of police officers in this country who have prior military service. And that being said, I'll say, you know, a lot of people question, you know, we see things that happen that shouldn't happen.
Right.
And I always say to people, in every profession, there's a percentage of people that should never have been in that profession. I don't care if it's doctor, dentist, plumber, you know, I don't care what it is. Not everybody is supposed to be a police officer with the authority to carry a gun, take people's freedom, and take someone's life. The more screening that they do now for police officers, the more psychological screening, all of that is good, because it's a serious job. I mean, it's the only job in this land where you can take someone's life or their freedom based on your judgment. And so not everybody's cut out for this job. You know, not everybody is qualified or the right person, personality-wise, psychologically, to become a police officer. That said, the vast majority of police officers in the country go their whole careers and never shoot their gun, never fire their weapon. The majority.
Right.
The ones that actually fire their weapon in the line of duty is the minority of all. And that's been that way for time immemorial almost.
Yeah. Now, what do you think about, because I asked my friend this actually recently, and he kind of just shrugged it off. He's like, I don't know, I just do. But I asked him once, I said, you know, being a cop and seeing essentially the negative side of mankind constantly, right? Like, you're just, you don't get called in for good things. You always get called because there's a problem. I'm like, how do you, like, turn that off and deal with that at the end of the day? Or how do you switch it off or whatever? Do you have any idea how they might do that? Or, you know, is there a problem with guys like doing that, not turning it off?
No, I do, because you understand that I was with America's Most Wanted for almost 20 years, and I dealt with serious, serious cases, murders, child molestation, child abductions, rapists, drug lords. But primarily, America's Most Wanted, we were trying to help victims of crime and law enforcement achieve justice. And so I was at crime scenes. I've seen people's brains dried on the wall at a crime scene that happened weeks before I came in to try to help them catch who did it. I've been in, you know, freezers where employees were lined up in the freezer at a restaurant and all shot, and I'm standing there 2 days later amongst the rotten food in a warm restaurant refrigerator with coagulated blood all over the floor. I mean, I've seen all these things. And for a while, during my first few years with America's Most Wanted, it was hard psychologically a little bit to just turn off what we were seeing, because we were dealing with the realness. We were getting the police reports and the autopsy pictures and the crime scene photos, and we were helping. We were putting together case files on these cases and flying out to interview the victims who had, you know, who had some cases survived being left for dead. And now I'm sitting there interviewing this person while they're telling me how some guy, you know, slit their throat and left them for dead. I mean, so it took me a while. It took all of us a while to figure out how to compartmentalize it. And it never interfered with being able to do the job, but it was the same as almost as if you were a police officer, because most police officers don't work homicide, you know?
Right.
Most police officers are, you know, doing patrol, they're doing this and that. But at AMW, we were dealing with the worst crimes possible and the people that had gotten away with it that they were trying to capture. So, I understand it, and you know, I got it to where I put it in the proper perspective. I will say I shed many tears during those years with victims that I had to sit down and interview, and to this day, I am still close to many of those victims' families. They call me on Christmas Day, 15, 20 years later.
Wow, that's good. That's great that they have someone that they can talk to, and that you were there for them, and you went through it with them. You know,
yeah. I don't know if you know this. Angeline Hartman from the National Center of Missing and Exploited Children.
She's the one that's on the show every week, right?
Yeah, with me. Yeah, she was with me at AMW.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, she was a reporter and producer at AMW with me for years. Yeah, me, her, and character all go back a long ways to the AMW.
And how social media has that's helped a lot with the with all the missing children and all the most wanted and all that. Don't you think?
Yeah, I think we've helped recover about six or eight missing kids and 11 fugitives captured with the assistance of live PD viewers. So yeah, it's a great partnership, and I look forward to doing it every single week to just try to help, you know, just to try to help and use the medium of television to have a positive outcome in a criminal case.
Yeah, and don't you think it puts the show puts a positive on the police officers themselves, because I mean, they show an amazing amount of restraint on, you know, I know if I was in some of the situations that they were in, I wouldn't be able to restrain myself as well as they do.
Oh, hell no. I just watched one where there was a guy. He's like, I just want to talk to you a minute. And he told him to come out of his trailer. And the guy's like, I'm going to get my shoes on. He's like, okay. And the cop stood outside for like 2 minutes straight without saying anything before the guy finally came out. I have 3 kids. And within 10 seconds, I would have been like, today, guy. Like, hurry up. Get your shoes on. You know, like, there's no way I could do that. I don't have the patience to handle that. So it's very, very impressive to see some of the strength that they have, for sure.
And you also have to remember this. In addition to live PD, police officers are being filmed by their own body cameras now, by everybody in the world's got a cell phone. So it's not just the officers on live PD who know that a camera crew is with them. Police in general in 2018 are being filmed millions and millions and billions of minutes a day across the country.
Right.
Very true. It's much, much different than it was 15 years ago, for sure.
Absolutely. So live PD is an extension of the times in that regard, really.
Yeah, yeah. Like I said, show's great. I get a really good question for you here. All right, I've been watching some of this live PD. I got to ask you, what's wrong with people? What the heck is wrong with so many people? I see so many people who get caught red-handed stealing something from a store, and then sit there and be like, "Oh, I didn't mean to steal that," and then they break down, and then they cry, and then they're like, "Oh, is this your meth?" And they're like, "No, that's not mine. It just happens to be, you know, in the purse I was stealing." I just can't believe, you know, like I got pulled over a couple years ago because I went around some lady, whatever, in a parking lot, and a cop pulled me over, and he's like, "You know why I did it?" And I wasn't like, you know, "Oh, I'm late for whatever." I was like, "You got me." You know, like I messed up and I paid the ticket and moved all my life. But I just don't understand. There's so many people that just, what's wrong with them?
I put it to you this way. For me personally, I don't judge people. I haven't walked in their shoes. I don't know what their life has been like. I don't know how they got to the point they were. I know that when they were born into this world and they took their first breath, their destiny was going to be determined by a whole lot of factors. I know that when I came in this world, I was fortunate enough to be the son of Reverend T. Wright Morris and Eleanor Morris, and to come from the family I came from of, you know, educated, Christian, law-abiding people who never had to suffer through poverty or any of those things. So I personally sit back and scratch my head just like you do, like, oh, man, why is he doing that or why is he doing that? But I don't judge people. I really don't, because I don't know why they're in the situation they're in. I don't know their story. All I know is what I'm seeing right then and there. And it may be comical. It may be, yeah, I don't believe. Why are you lying like that? Obviously, dude, come on. We know you're lying. I mean, but I just don't judge people. I just, you know, I look at it for what it is. And I just say to myself, you know what? There, but for the grace of God, go I. You see so many people, man, that are pulled over and they don't have a license, right? Well, people like you and I, I've never had my license suspended. Well, I had suspended once when I was like 21, but I didn't pay a ticket. You see all these people. The criminal justice system is a money system. It functions on money. And it takes money from people for breaking law. Speed cameras take money from you, send your ticket in the mail, you got to pay it. You don't pay it fast enough, it doubles. Well, the average American doesn't have $400 extra, according to a recent survey. And only about 12% of Americans have $2,000 in the bank. So you see a lot of these people that are pulled over and they don't have a license. It's because they got a ticket they couldn't afford to pay in the first place, because they're on the economic margins of survival. And people say, oh, why do people don't have licenses? There are some that are just habitual ne'er-do-wells and just don't care about the law. You have people like that who the law doesn't mean anything to them. But then again, you have a lot of people that if you're a single mom working at Walmart and you're making minimum wage and you've got two or three kids and you get a ticket because your insurance expired or whatever, because you couldn't afford to pay it, and now you can't afford to pay that ticket either. Now your license gets suspended. Then you get pulled over on live PD, and they say, do you have a license? You say, no, you don't. And we sit there and go, here's another one. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, yeah, I totally see it, yeah.
Yeah, I was actually going to ask you, because of the notes you take, if there was any type of statistic that anyone knew of the amount of people that do get pulled over without a license or insurance, because it amazes me every week about how many people are driving without a license.
There's a lot. And, you know, people, I mean, this is a vast society. I mean, America is 330 million people, and that's 330 million people that have a whole lot of different backgrounds and points of reference and means or no means. And, you know, there's no one shoe that fits everybody when it comes to the legal system in America. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Well, you got anything else, Jeff? I know you have to get going soon.
I got one for you. So recently, last couple of years or whatever, I guess, or since you've been doing live PD, what is the craziest thing that you guys have seen? What's the weirdest thing that has come across the show?
I think weirdest. There's a bunch of weird ones, but remember the guy in Pasco County, Vincent, the guy who was eating a whole ham?
Yes.
Cops came to the door because his roommate called because he was scared of Vincent. And Vincent comes to the door eating a whole Danish ham.
Yes.
That thing just sticks. And he was like a really intense looking dude. He had the face and looks of an actor, you know, and he was, and then he showed up again trespassing at a convenience store a few episodes later. But I've never seen a person eat a whole ham before. To this day, when people ask me that question, he just pops to my mind first for some reason. Vincent the ham guy.
Vincent the ham guy.
Oh, and then, you know, and then the guy in Nye County who drilled a hole through the turtle shell
and had it
on the back patio.
Yeah, I remember that one.
And then
he
kept getting arrested multiple times on the show, carrying guns illegally after they took his gun because he had initially pulled a gun on somebody at a donut shop, which is why we went to his house in the first place.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then he got charged for animal endangerment or something like that too, right?
Yeah, he did. Yep. In addition to the gun charge, he got animal endangerment. And then I think the last time they pulled him over, he had a big, what, 44 Magnum or something in a holster on him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, dude, his Second Amendment rights are on, He's about to lose his Second Amendment rights, I would believe.
Well, I'll tell you what. I think after I pick up my kid from school, I think I'm going to sit on the computer and try to find the episode with the guy with the ham, just so I can hopefully see – hopefully it goes to a shot of your face so I can see the first time you see the guy with the ham.
I tell you, man, he was he made quite the sensation. People were like, wow. And he was so intense. I remember he had a pentagram painted on the floor of his raggedy house, and he brought the cops in, showed him his pentagram and devil symbols. I was like, what is up with Duke? You know, he's got a hand. He worships Satan. I mean, he's like,
what? Yeah.
You know, a satanic ham eater. I mean, you know, where else can you see that but Lafayette, right?
That's right.
That's right.
Well, we look forward to the show coming back on. Actually, this episode will be out on Saturday, so the show would have been back on last night. And you catch Tom again tonight on Live PD on the A&E Network. And where can people find you, Tom? Do you have you want to do any plugs?
Well, you can check out my podcast, PD Stories, on Spotify, Apple iTunes. Anywhere you get podcasts, you can check out PD Stories. And you can always hit me up on Tom Morris Junior1@twitter.com.
All right.
We really appreciate you calling and taking the time out of your vacation to call us, Tom.
It's my pleasure, guys.
All right. Thank you so much, Tom.
Thank you.
Thanks, man.
Yes, I understand that every life must end. As we sit alone, I know someday we must go.
Oh, I'm a lucky man to count on both hands the ones I love.
Some folks just have one, you know, others they've got none. Oh. Stay with me, oh, let's just breathe. Practiced are my sins, never gonna let me win.
Under everything, just another human being.
Yeah, I don't wanna hurt her. There's so much in this world to make me believe. Stay with me, you're all I see.
Did I say that I need you? Did I say that I want you? Oh, if I didn't, I'm a fool, you see. No one knows this more than me.
I come clean. I wonder every day as I look upon your face.
Everything you gave and nothing you would take.
Nothing you would take.
Everything you gave.
Did I say that I need you? Oh, did I say that I want you? Or if I didn't, I'm a fool, you see. No one knows this more than me. As I come clean,
nothing you would take.
everything you gave. Love you till I die. Meet you on the other side.